All right, and welcome to this very special edition of the Women's Soccer Zone podcast. This is the 2018 NWSL Draft Edition. My name is JJ Duke. Kieran Tavum is, he's getting this one off. Man works a lot, and he said, take this one on your own. And I said, okay, sure, but I'm going to need a little bit of help doing this. So we've got a great show on tap for you. We're going to take a look at what is to come throughout this draft, try to make some predictions, try and look at what's going to be coming ahead for some of these athletes, and hopefully make light of what we're going to see over the four rounds. Later on, we're going to have a chat with one of our draft prospects out of the University of Central Florida, Morgan Ferrara. But right now, I'd like to welcome in our guest analyst, if you will. She's been with us before on a couple of occasions. You can see her work at Equalizer Soccer and did a tremendous job covering the NCAA game this past season over there. So I'd like to welcome in Jennifer Gordon. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks, JJ, for that lovely introduction. Excited to talk about the draft.
It seems that it's always this time. Everything kind of really gets fired up and going. I think what between you and I, we've covered each of the drafts that the media has been allowed to attend. So that's, what, five now?
Yeah. The first one was kind of like in a corner somewhere. And I think Jeff Kasouf was the only person there.
Well, Jeff, as we know, is a man that has a lot of soccer mileage behind him and has covered some big events. But looking forward to this one, and unfortunately, as it seems so often over the past couple of WOSA's own podcasts, it's kind of have to talk about the negative first, which is unfortunate, but we knew that this draft class was going to have some very quality athletes coming out, and that's not to say that that isn't the case this year, but there are a fair few people missing, at least on the entry list. We're recording this show about a week out from the draft event itself, and there are some noticeable MIAs, and really, Jen, I think we'll start at the top. Andy Sullivan, the Mac Herman Trophy winner, not enlisted yet. Surprised, or is this something that we could have seen coming?
Yes and no. It's one of those things that, it's one of those things where I think after she had talked with the Washington Post in May, it was kind of like, okay, she's going to go into the NWSL draft. But actually, before she started at Stanford, she went over and trained with Leon for a little while. So I'm not surprised. I mean, this is someone who's, you know, obviously would be interested in or has been interested in the past in the European games. So it doesn't completely surprise me. I'm still waiting to see how this all shakes out. There's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes as far as when people decide to declare that I don't think we know are fully aware of. So yes and no, I guess we're just gonna have to see.
Well, it's not, it's not only her, it's a bunch of quality players and ones that we thought could have been bona fide, I guess, the quote-unquote lottery draft picks, which are the first couple. Rebecca Quinn from Duke, the Canadian international, not yet listed. One that I was a little bit surprised, Rachel Corbeau, who is absolutely phenomenal in her 4 years at Georgetown, not listed. Vanessa Gregoire of Princeton, or the Tigers, got to the Elite Eight this year for the first time in quite a long time, not there, and the list goes on and on. How much of this is an impact right now in the status of the league, where not as many seniors that we would expect be putting themselves in for the draft?
It's one of those things where I think there's a lot of factors. And I do think it does say something about the status of the league. But, I mean, it's always been the case where we've had, might not be at this level, but we've also always had a lot of players who decided not to pursue NWSL. And a lot of that is, I think, in the women's game, you're always thinking about what you're going to do after you're done playing. So these women are very accomplished off the field too, and they have options. And I think it's a good thing, honestly, in a way, because I don't want people throwing everything into one basket and then ending up, you know, high and dry. But like for instance, last year with the University of Auburn, neither one of the Ramsey or sisters declared, which I thought, you know, they could have definitely had a shot at playing. There's always, and they had, I know one of the sisters was an accounting major, so they had stuff lined up and they were just ready to move on with their lives. So I think that's part of it. I think it's also kind of a statement about the state of the league. I mean, we're recording this on the year anniversary of the Courage being announced. So that's within about, okay, by the time the draft's around, about 360 couple days that you've had two complete changeovers and you know, movements of team. It doesn't really sit. That's definitely not a good thing as far as if you're, you know, hitching your wagon to something. I think also perhaps with the president of U.S. Soccer could have an impact on NWSL too. If you think about the couple of million dollars that U.S. Soccer puts into the league each year. So there's a lot of factors. And obviously, you know, there's been a lot of things come out about teams that are still around that, you know, is concerning. So there are a lot of things, and I don't think it's any one thing. I think it might be kind of like a perfect storm of things.
Absolutely. And I think also, you know, in addition to the list of points that you brought up, something that was kind of made attention a few weeks ago is just not to say the lack of spots that are open, but let's face it, out of the 10 teams that there are in this league, you have that maximum of 20 roster spots. How many of them are filled for each team? Well, it's close to the full maximum for all 10 sides. So, yeah, the jobs thing becomes a little bit of a question mark, too, as it's so much that it's kind of the moment that you have of getting drafted as opposed to the moment plus, okay, you know that you're going to be going to a team and you're going to have at least secured work for a week. Now, obviously, there are a lot of things that we can go on and on about, but at the end of the day, there are still a lot of quality players that are going to be involved in this draft. And, you know, let's just get right into it. We look at the first round. There are a few teams that we should definitely talk about and, you know, what their day could be like. And I think it's only fair to start off with a team that is near and dear to your location, as you're right around the capital area, the Washington Spirit. They're on the clock. They finished last in the table. They have a lot of talent, but it just didn't seem like they got it all together, especially after, you know, coming off of a year where the year prior they got to the championship final. So this could be a big day coming up for Jim Gabara, and he has a whole lot of draft picks to work with. As the last that I saw, he's got 7, including two first rounders.
Assuming we're only dealing with entrants that are the current ones that we have, I think that the number one, based on who's definitely on board right now, would be Savannah McCaskill. I think you'd have to draft her. It would be interesting. I think that would be it's funny because I think that they do have a decent attack right now, especially if everyone can stay healthy. But I would just think if you look at the players and the different kind of layers and levels, Savannah McCaskill would definitely be a little bit above any of the other players I think that are available right now. So I think they would have to go and take her. That second spot they have in the first round, they have to take a defender. They absolutely have to take a defender. I think that was their Achilles heel last year. And that's kind of an interesting question because by the time you get to 6, I think if you look based on the needs of other teams, I think there'll definitely be maybe a defender or two already gone. If we're looking at only the players that are currently signed up for the draft. Absolutely. So I think it'll be interesting to see where they go. Skylar DeBray did play for them, won the season that they won the W League title. I think that could be someone they would look at maybe there. I think that might be a little high for her, but they do need a defender, so they're going to have to address that in either the first or the second round.
Well, she was a third team All-American at Duke University, Defender of the Year in the ACC. And you know, you talk about defense. Yeah, that seems to be of the positions right now, at least in the field term, where there is good talent there, but I think that's going to be kind of the theme throughout this entire day is that these coaches are going to really have to do their homework. There are some gems out there, but you're going to have to figure out some ways to be like, okay, you know what, we've got to make rounds 3 and 4 work, and with Washington having 2 picks in each of the first 3 rounds before any movement go, yeah, it could be... It could be really going deep into the draft board. But then again, with Jim Gabara, as we know, he's been around the game for quite a long time, and he knows how to draft. They could find their way into a little bit of success. So definitely I like your take on getting McCaskill first. I think that's pretty much obvious across the board if Andy Sullivan does not put in. But that's where they go. Now, the Boston Breakers are next up on the list, and they have picks just number 2 in the first round. Also a pretty big day for Matt Beard's team as well, because you know, they do equally return a good amount of talent and a good amount of attacking talent, let's be fair. Natasha Dowie had a good season last year. Adriana Leone had a very good campaign. But they, similarly, too, could be looking for a defender in addition to depth across the board.
I agree with you. That's, you know, I just want to make clear, I don't rate Skylar DeBrey as the best center back in this class. But I think there's so many teams that need defenders that if the top couple that aren't declared don't declare between now and next Thursday, I think there'll be a couple of defenders taken before Washington picks again. I think if you're Boston, I would say maybe Gabby Zeiler there at 2. I think a big issue with that might be that she is obviously, like, the news came out last week that she is playing basketball. But we've seen that in the past. Elizabeth Eddy actually was playing lacrosse at USC when she was drafted. She actually didn't end up playing that year, but then played the following year. So I could see them going that way. It could obviously, too, maybe take a forward. I don't know. I think that they probably maybe go that way, because Gabby Zeiler can obviously play a lot of different positions too, so they need depth. I think that would be a good way to address that.
Absolutely. And yeah, you mentioned about Zeiler before, and it's a rarity where we see the dual sport athletes, right, across college. Everything's so sports center specific around one game. But with Florida, and it seems kind of interesting how the last couple of years the Florida Gators have always picked up injury bugs in the basketball court. I think Pamela Bigich was another former soccer player that also spent some time in the hardwood as well. So yeah, you make an interesting point how she could very well be one of those first few players taken off the board, but because the fact that she might not be available until opening day, that could knock down her draft stock. I'm curious to hear your opinion on this one. Another one of those center backs who's at least on the higher end of things right now, and I think could be a player that could get drafted early on. Indigo Gibson had a really nice season this year with Cal, second team All-American. Could she be another one of those options if Boston or another one of those teams looking for center back doesn't want to go for DeBrey?
Yeah, I mean, I think Gibson goes before DeBrey. I think she's the kind of defender who, if you watch, I think, the game Cal versus Stanford, I watched it on YouTube, and she did a very good job of keeping Stanford, limiting their chances. She does have the only thing that makes me a little leery of her is she does have a tendency, if she's defending, anytime she's defending in the box, she does have a tendency to have her hands on the player, which typically is okay, but I think if you do that constantly, and we've seen the state of officiating in the NWSL, that does worry me slightly. But I do think she's definitely the first center back off the board. And I think, you know, recent call-up just kind of shows why that, you know, kind of just shows the kind of caliber of player she is.
Absolutely. And now looking past Boston here, we got the Houston Dash picking at number 3. They've got 6 picks on the day, 3 third-rounders. And Vera Paul coming in, good signing, I think, for the Dash as their new head coach. Obviously, they're going to get a little bit of help on the drafting end with Lisa Cole, who many will remember as the head coach that started with the Boston Breakers in year 1 of the league. But similar team again where they're going to need a lot of help across the field. And we're still kind of looking to see where Kelia Ohai and how she's getting on with her recovery right now. If she's ready for opening day, time will only tell. But for me, I think this team screams out that they need an out-and-out striker and someone that could work well with Ohai and with Rachel Daly.
It's funny because they could also use some, I think, help at the back, at least some depth in the back. We saw what happened last year. They just were kind of decimated with injuries at times too. I think as far as the forwards are concerned, there's not too many that don't have a red flag for me on some level. I think a player that has, I don't think there's any player that improved her stock any more than Amani Dorsey this year. But I think of Duke, who was the ACC Offensive Player of the Year and a first-team All-American, she just had an absolute breakout senior year. She's solid with both feet. She tends to be on the left side. But she just great pace, can definitely get you on the counter. But I think it's one of those things where she had one really great year, but is that an outlier, or is this really what she can do, if that makes any sense? And I think she's also shown at times she can be a bit hesitant, so as far as, like, decision-making, so I think that could be an issue. But I do think she's a player, if the top couple don't go, then she could definitely be one of those players that's definitely taken in the first half of the first round. But I'm not really sure on that. If you're looking for a forward, I think that she'd be the name that a lot of people would be throwing out there right now, because this isn't a great draft class, I think, for forwards.
Well, you do make an interesting point about the draft class. I think there are a bunch of players that are pure out-and-out goal scorers. I mean, you talk about Dorsey. I think Michaela Bam with West Virginia had an excellent season. There are a couple of players out on the West Coast that I think will get a look. One of those actually being Chloe Williams out of Eastern Washington. Get this, a three-time Big Sky Offensive Player of the Year, four-time first-team All-Conference, over 40 goals. Then you have players like Kiana Palacios, who's the midfielder of the year in the Big West, but could be a big goal scorer when her number is called upon. I mean, there are players, I think,
yes,
out there, but it's just, again, same thing. Do your homework and who can fit into the best style.
I hate to say this, but I don't see teams taking players from smaller conferences in the first round. I just don't see it. And by smaller conferences, there's like six or seven conferences that I would consider kind of like the first tier of women's soccer, and I wouldn't put the Big West or the Big Sky, obviously, and those two. So it's not even a knock on their talent, it's just a knock kind of like you want to see what they're like against conferences that are kind of known for having great players on every team, even the teams that kind of finish at the bottom of the table. And those are kind of unknowns for players like Chloe Williams. Although, Eastern Washington, making a couple NCAA berths while she was there, which they, were really not good in the Big Sky before she came in. So that's a credit to her. But I just think that coaches are going to stick to what they're comfortable, especially in that first round, and that's the major conferences.
Absolutely. And there's going to be gems all over. It's, again, maybe might not be the first round, it could be rounds two or three. Actually, I think the NWSL, they posted before the running of this episode, that kind of players that came through in the fourth round that, you know, they turn out to be high quality talent. So it's only just a wait and see game. One more team that I think we should highlight before we move on. Sky Blue has a very interesting road ahead of them coming. Obviously, they made noise right before the end of the new year where they made that trade with now the Utah Royals. They sent Kelly O'Hara and Taylor Lytle across, get Shea Groom and Christina Gibbons, and a top five draft pick, which means they double up at 4 and 5. They have a lot of holes that they have to, I guess, add to and, you know, kind of plug up the depth a little bit, but I have a feeling that they can go a number of ways, either by drafting or they could be packaging to potentially get a little bit more of a seasoned player.
I think Sky Blue does need some more veteran players. And so I think that would be the packaging would probably be the better route for them to go. I mean, I think you got so many questions regarding what do they do with Christina Gibbons? Like, where do you put her? I think that you, after the second half of last year, you have to put her in the midfield. So that leaves a big hole at outside back. I know sometimes Kelly O'Hara didn't always line up there, but it's you know, obviously she played on wing too, but there's a flank player. You need a flank player. I'll put it that way. So I think that could be a route they could go. You've mentioned Michaela Abam before. She's fast. She's athletic. She's very tenacious when defending. She actually plays defender or has played defender with youth national teams. And I think a lot of people saw that goal she scored in the semifinal of last year's College Cup. I mean, she's a good pickup. Like I said, I really think it would be in their best interest though to try to get some a veteran kind of to help lead that group. You don't want too young of a team. I think that typically doesn't work out well.
For sure, and it's interesting that you talk about bringing veteran players into the mix. Now, I actually went back and did a bit of research, and we have not actually seen a trade that involves a current player on a roster in over a year. There have been, in fact, 6 trades throughout the previous drafts. We're obviously excluding year one, because obviously at that point there were still no players available to be taken, but Portland Thorns have actually been involved in every trade up to this point. Now, with Sky Blue, as you're saying, they could be well vested to be one of those teams to trade. Portland Thorns have picks 8 and 9. Something tells me that after a few losses that they've had, with obviously Nadia Nadim going to Manchester City, you have Amandine Henry going back to France, now playing with Lyon. Something tells me that while Mark Parsons is a guy that wheels and deals with the best of the business, he's going to be sticking to the draft here.
You know, it's one of those things where they do have some international spots open, and we don't really know what they're going to do yet with those, and they typically do use those. So I think there's always, with the end of your sale, you kind of go in blind because you don't know all the time what every team is doing. But, yeah, I do think that they'll end up they can pick up some players that they don't necessarily need to use on the field right away either, because they do have, you know, even though they've had some considerable losses in the offseason, they still have an insane roster. So they can, you know, either take some risks if they have in the past, like last year. They pick up players that looks like they're going to go abroad, and then they'll, you know, come and play with them, or, you know, maybe a player that is coming off an injury that's going to need some time to get better. Some stuff like that, because, you know, like I said, this draft is so weird because it's definitely not as deep as last year's draft, so I'm kind of interested to see how teams figure that out. Or it's possible that they keep one and then trade one, too. I could see that happening.
Absolutely, and if I had to ask you right now, from the teams that we have yet to talk about, Chicago being one where they have an inordinate amount of 7 draft picks, and they're a team that does not have much space on their roster. North Carolina, a team that's pretty full. Orlando, Seattle, and obviously Utah Royals now with the queen of trades herself, Laura Harvey, at the helm. Does one of those teams make a deal before the draft day is over?
I mean, I'd be absolutely shocked if we see no deals. And, you know, so I I think there's a good chance that at least one of those couple of teams is involved in a trade of some sort. I mean, we got to use those timeouts, right?
Oh, God, let's not start about the timeouts. I think, what, our first year they had a timeout per team per round, and I don't think we left the draft room until 5.5 hours after it started. Hopefully we've gotten the formula right where it's just one timeout, and if the league ever needs to quote-unquote review things, well, they just do it rather quickly. Finally, to wrap things up here, we talked about, again, the depth and how things are going, but at the end of the day, there are a lot of good players out on the radar who are putting their name in. Currently, the list stands at 142, and no doubt that's going to grow a little bit. If you had to pick one, and I'll pick a player as well that might not be on a lot of people's radar, but you think, you know what, this player may have an opportunity to make an impact on whatever team they get drafted, who would that be?
It's one of those situations where there are a lot of players in this draft, I think, that unfortunately that are foreign, that I think could make an impact on teams. So I think that's something that I've been following. Kayla Abdeck from UCF, I think that she's got a pretty good shot conversion rate. She's really fast and is a flank player, which I think there's a couple of teams looking for flank players. I think she could be a player that teams look at. And I'll let you go ahead. There's one other one that I kind of want to talk about a little bit.
Well, go ahead. Who is it? Who do you have in mind?
This is just something I want to predict because I could totally see it happening just based on what we've seen in other drafts. But I could see Rory Dame picking up Alexa Benn. She's 5 foot tall, which is kind of problematic in NWSL, and I hate to put an emphasis on size, but she's got great vision. She's really skillful and technical, and she also is an Eclipse alum, so it totally sounds like something Rory would do. So just throwing that one out there.
And of course, obviously, coming from the great DePaul Blue Demons team, which is kind of very close to where the Red Stars play, pretty much in the heart of the Chicagoland area. So not a bad pick there. If I were to go ahead and make a boldish type prediction here, first off, I think the one thing is to note, you know, goalkeepers is always an interesting situation where there's not going to be many opportunities for youngsters out of college to come in and make an impact. This is a very strong goalkeeping class that we actually have this year. Emily Boyd, an All-American out of Cal, Pac-12 Goalie of the Year. Then Casey Murphy, who's actually, she had 1 year of eligibility left, but elected that she wants to come and play now because she sat out the 2016 season with the U-20 Women's World Cup. We have the Clem Cousins, Caitlin out of Wisconsin, Northwestern product being Lauren, and then EJ Proctor, who, you know, nearly stole an NCAA championship for a couple of occasions for the Duke Blue Devils. I think you have to keep an eye. There might be a goalie picked, but if there is one outlier that I think either could be drafted or might just miss out on the draft but could find her way onto a team, and I know you said not to go against the small schools, but I'm a small school kid myself. Keep an eye out for Kendall Hamm of Bucknell. Now, this is a player that was a third-team All-American last year, three-time Patriot League first-teamer, has had over 40 goals in her career, and was part of that last stand that Bucknell had to be an unbeaten, untied team up until the waning months of November into early December, or excuse me, late October into early November. And you know what? She's a player that does a lot of little things right, and she's got some tremendous pace about her. So I would not be shocked if there is a team looking for a little bit of an athlete that has some good finishing abilities in the third and fourth round. Keep an eye on her. So, yeah, you know, obviously, like we said, there's a lot of good players out there that are going to find out that they're going to be potentially continuing on their career in the professional game come up next or this Thursday with the NWSL draft. So, Jennifer, I think that's going to wrap it up for our segment here. Thank you very much for taking a little bit of time and chatting with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And make sure to stay tuned. We're going to take a little bit of a break. And when we come back, we're going to have a chat with a draft prospect out of the University of Central Florida, that being Morgan Ferreira. So we'll be right back after this.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
All right, and welcome back to our special edition here of the Women's Soccer Zone podcast, the 2018 NWSL College Draft Edition. And joining me on the line right now is a very good product that we're seeing out of the American Athletic Conference, more specifically the University of Central Florida. That's Morgan Ferreira, who joins us from the West Coast right now, where it's a lot warmer than I am at the moment. Morgan, how are you doing?
Hi, JJ. How are you? Honored to be on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for joining us. So, it's been a very good year for you thus far. UCF having an absolutely amazing season, picking up 13 wins. I think you guys had a streak of, 15 matches unbeaten or something along those lines?
We did indeed.
And also picking up a conference regular season crown as well. But we'll get to the team in a moment. Talk about you. This was kind of a nice little outcoming party this year. 13 goals, doubling, I think, your career best in a season. What changed? What clicked?
I think last summer, I'm out in LA training with Beast Mode Soccer, actually, and he stresses the importance of setting goals. And last summer, I talked to my coach and I was like, look, I think I have the ability to become the player of the year. So I set some individual goals. One of them was to score a goal in every game, which I did fall a little short, but hopefully I can work towards that on whichever team I end up on next in 2018. But I think the most important part of my success was setting goals in the beginning and then just working my butt off as hard as I could before the season, getting extra fit, and I actually didn't know what position I was going to end up in at the beginning of the season, so I think we found the best fit in our system at Target Ford. It was definitely a team effort. I wouldn't have had the success I did without my teammates, so very important to set goals.
Yeah, absolutely, and goals are flying in, as well as you said one of those big goals that you said at the beginning of the year was the conference player of the year, the offensive player of the year, which was achieved. Now, you talked about not even sure what position that you're going to be in. Was it more so of a subtle change between the striker roles, or were you working more as an outside or a midfielder as opposed to an all-out-and-out striker?
So actually, junior year, I was behind Carol Rodriguez. She now plays at Bordeaux in France. I was playing the 10 role at offensive mid. We had a German girl come in, Stephanie Sanders, and she's a Target forward. So I thought that I was going to end up back in the midfield, but she ended up tearing her ACL before the season. So I stepped in at Target forward and found some success there.
And then when did you realize things were starting to click a little bit, that, okay, so this year might be just a little bit different from the three in the past?
I think, you know, what's crazy is in our out-of-conference play, I wasn't really finding the back of the net as much as I would have liked, but Tiff just kept saying, stay patient, it's coming. I hadn't played that position in a couple years. So in the beginning of conference, we opened against Cincinnati, and I didn't score, but I created a lot of opportunities. So I was like, okay, the goals are coming. And then the next weekend, I scored 5 goals in 1 weekend. And then the weekend after that, I scored 4 goals in a weekend. So I was like, okay, I still got it. But it was definitely just staying patient, staying consistent, and just wishing the best for my team, getting assists when I can, and playing my best, even if I'm not finding the back of the net.
Absolutely, and obviously that's going to be something that no doubt will transfer over into the pro game. Coming in, to now the back half of the season, you talked about how the goals weren't going in, but the team was getting success. Obviously, down in Florida, you guys had a little bit of an interrupted part of the season due to the bit of the nasty weather that we had with the hurricanes coming through in Florida. But then things just started working out. You get into conference play, as you say, goals flying in left, right, and center. I think you had a hat trick, against Memphis in one of those games?
Yes, sir.
And then just kept going on and on. So at what point were you thinking, okay, so right now everything's kind of going for me. What are the little things I might need to start improving on that might help me when it gets to potentially the draft come in January?
Oh, I think one of the biggest things for me is staying healthy. Obviously, it's a tough game we play, especially in the college side when we play two games in a weekend. So during season, it was staying healthy, staying fit, just trying to stay consistent around the goal. But I think one of the biggest things I need to work on, obviously, as I transfer into the professional game is speed of play, just getting the ball off my feet quickly and working on my movement outside the box. And depending where a coach wants to play me, if I stay at target four, then definitely the movement around the box, getting the ball at my feet more. And obviously, you can never be too good at finishing on goal. So,
absolutely. And also, you've had a bit of an interesting collegiate career as well. Now, you didn't start at UCF. You started at Mississippi State in the SEC, and then you transferred over after your freshman year. Why was it that this school was going to be the right decision for you to go there?
Coming out of Mississippi State, I loved it there. I did. I just was seeking better opportunities soccer-wise, and it actually happened really quick. I left Mississippi State at the beginning of Christmas break, which was December, and then I visited a couple schools, and I actually committed to UCF without my head coach ever seeing me play, but I knew as soon as I met her, she's the woman I wanted to play for. And it was closer to home, but it was far enough where mom couldn't come knocking on the door in the middle of the night, but it was definitely a great decision to switch. I think I found myself in I became a better soccer player playing under Tiff, and she developed me into who I am today. So I think it was definitely the right move, but obviously I wish Mississippi State the best always. I still talk to the girls and root for them and see that they had a great season this year too.
Absolutely. And kind of wrapping things up on the college side of things, what was the biggest takeaway from your, 4 years in total in college, but 3 years specifically with the Knights?
It's a roller coaster. You're going to have ups and downs. I had two surgeries before last season. It's going to be a battle mentally as much as it is physically, and just staying consistent and keeping faith in God and keeping your teammates around and just being the best team player you can be. It was a great experience. I was so sad for it to end. I'm still not over it, but it was definitely just keeping the trust, keeping the faith, and staying consistent.
Now, the one thing I was trying to really avoid in talking about, since this is a women's soccer podcast, but all right, we got to get this out of the room right now. We are recording this interview the evening after the collegiate football championship, where Alabama won in overtime against Georgia. Now, for those who do not know, UCF had a perfect football season. I've gone onto your social media accounts, on Twitter specifically, and seeing that there is a lot of salt that's being thrown out onto the table right now. Is there some air that you'd like to clear, perhaps, and maybe the uncrowned champions of NCAA football?
Obviously, I'm a Knight till I die, so I'm going to support whatever the football team is throwing out there. I'm extremely proud of those guys. I'm lucky to call my friends. But at the end of the day, I think that our conference in all sports across the board, obviously we had quite a few teams in the NCAA tournament in soccer as well. I think it does not get the respect that it deserves, and I think the American Conference is definitely competing with Power 5 schools, so hopefully the football team having the success that they did can really put us on the map. And I know they've put UCF on the map. I'm out in California, and people are recognizing UCF. When we were traveling in season, people didn't even know what UCF stood for. So I'm really proud of them for making a name for us. And are we national champions? I guess that's up to whoever you ask, but I'm extremely proud of those guys.
Absolutely. Diplomatically said as well. And thanks for having a little fun and being on the spot like that. But now kind of turn our attention to what lies ahead. Now, it's interesting with this draft class coming up that this is a group that has been around seeing this league, the NWSL, being around thriving when you guys were still in high school. How has it been for you kind of watching the progress of the league go about and think to yourself, well, you know what, since this league is staying afloat, staying with good intentions, keeping the ball rolling, is this where I could see myself perhaps in 5 years?
Well, I'm
obviously, it's been a dream of mine since I was a kid to play professional soccer, and seeing the league do as well as it's doing, and obviously in Orlando, we have a huge support there. So seeing it grow, I think my junior year, I was like, wow, this is really something. Like, if I work hard enough, could I do this? Like, is this for real? And now that it's here, it's like, I'm just so happy to have the opportunity to even be considered. But I'm really happy the league is up and coming, and the huge deal with Lifetime TV, I'd be watching games from my couch. And what can you say? Like, it's up and coming, and that's awesome.
Yeah, how is it for a player that's in college and, you know, okay, so you're seeing all the games on TV, obviously the streaming that's been going on for the years. Does it make things a lot easier to really know about what the different types of identities teams are like? Who perhaps, you know, if you do get drafted by Team A, how would you fit in with them as opposed to perhaps on another team?
Right, I mean, obviously, I'll be thankful wherever it gives me opportunity, but I definitely see certain teams like, oh, I think I could fit really well there playing with certain players. Obviously, not all teams play with a target forward. Which teams play a 4-3-3? Which teams would fit me best? And obviously, wherever I go or whatever position I end up in, I'll make the most of the opportunity. But I've definitely watched games and seen myself like, wow, I could do this. I could fit here. I could be playing with people I've watched when I was a kid, playing with my idols. So I think definitely watching throughout the season helped me develop as a player, but also for a potential draft prospect.
You mentioned how the community has really grown with the Orlando team, especially because your campus is only a stone's throw away from their stadium. How much has it impacted your team as the college team, being able to go watch them, you know, not obviously week in, week out, because the school semester doesn't exactly overlap nicely with the league season, but still having a chance to go catch a couple of games here and there?
Oh, it was awesome. And my teammates and I, we caught every game we could of the Pride. Obviously, we wanted to show them support. I think that the Orlando soccer community is growing and growing and growing because we don't have an NFL team or any team to support. So it was really cool getting to see the Pride. Obviously, Alex Morgan and Marta, two of the best players in the world, we're getting to see right in front of our eyes, right in our backyard. So it's been cool to see the Orlando community come around, and hopefully it'll just keep growing as the Pride keeps getting better and better.
For sure. Now, you mentioned at the top of the show that you're out training with Beast Mode Soccer. I know, obviously, he's always going all year round, but one of the big things I think that's a nice little unique advantage for you is that he trains a lot of professional players when they're not in season. Now, have you had an opportunity perhaps to work with a few players here and there and maybe kind of pick their brains a little bit in what's going to help you? And if so, what'd you learn?
I actually have had the greatest opportunity. I've been training with Rachel Daly and Christy Mewis from the Houston Dash and Brooke Elby from the Boston Breakers. And obviously, I was so nervous the first couple days. They probably were like, who is this girl? She's not good. But once I got over that, they have been so helpful in just showing me, okay, well, if I have the ball outside, this is how I want my forward to make a run. Or this is here, come check in, check out, going for this cross, hold your run. They've been just so helpful in showing me like how a professional forward moves, and obviously have stressed the importance of how fit you have to be. So I did a couple fitness sessions of theirs, and it's a whole nother level, but it's been an honor to train with them and see how hard they work in the off season and just get in the door with them and see what it's like to be a professional athlete and if I can hang with them. And it's just been a great experience being out here with them.
For sure. And as we move forward now into, well, closing in on the draft, when you and I were chatting before, you were not going to be in Philadelphia for the event, but you said you're going to be keeping a very close eye on how things are going. What do you think that day is going to be like for you, expectations-wise?
I think Coach Tiffany definitely puts in her head, like, expect the worst, prepare for the best. So obviously it's going to be a stressful day, but I'm not going to get discouraged if I don't get drafted. I know I'll get an opportunity somewhere, and once I get the opportunity, I know I'll make the most of it. So I'll be in Orlando with my family and teammates, because quite a few of us have entered the draft, and just hope for the best. It'll be a nervous day, but it'll be a great day because the fact that I'm even being considered.
Absolutely. Well, Morgan, thanks for taking a few minutes to chat with us. Best of luck in the coming draft. And, of course, sincere congratulations on your success at the college level.
Well, thank you, JJ. It's an honor to be here.
Absolutely. And that's going to do it here for us for today's special edition of the Women's Soccer Zone podcast. Of course, it's only just going to be a few days away until we have the 2018 NWSL College Draft, which will be taking place at the Pennsylvania Convention Center on Thursday, January the 18th. Start time is the 10 a.m. early bird special, so make sure to get your coffee cups ready to go for that. We'll have coverage throughout the event. Of course, make sure to keep an eye on us on social media at WOSOZone. Of course, you can reach out to us as well on email at WOSOZone@gmail.com. And for everyone here, I'm JJ Duke signing off, and until next time, goodbye for now.